Pittsburgh Steeler fans, welcome back to another episode of Steeler Stat Geek. This is the Steel Curtain Network, Dave Schofield, coming at you Thursday morning, June 1st. June 1st. All right, this is both somewhat terrifying, somewhat concerning, and somewhat fantastic at the same time. What do we want to do? We want the good, the bad. What do we want first? Let's go fantastic. All right. Why would June be great? Well, it's 1 month closer. That means in the next month, the Steelers will be reporting to training camp. Or even better, it's the next to last month of the year where there is not Steelers football. That's right, because in August, yes, it's preseason, but guess what? Preseason is better than no season. I like seeing all the guys on the bottom of the roster. I love the preseason games. And you get those in August. So all you've got is the month of June, the month of July, then you've got a month with Steelers football. That's fantastic. That's what makes it so great. Now, why would I be concerned? That's because of what happened with me a year ago. I talked about this on the Scobro show, and where the night before June 1st, I said, you know what? I'm a little bit concerned about something. People are like, well, what is it? Well, tomorrow's June 1st, and something inside of me is like, maybe something's going to change with Stefon Tuitt. And that's exactly what happened. He ended up announcing his retirement, waited until June 1st to do it, to really help the Steelers with their salary cap. I don't think that's going to be something going on this year, but it's still that date that, like, you know, if somebody was really holding off to do something and to help out the Steelers, that's what they would wait to do. That's really the only time I've had that happen was last year. I can't think of another year that it was something that happened on June 1st that really wasn't that a lot of people were expecting it, that they were talking about, you know, people weren't talking about that with Stefon Tuitt before June 1st. Honestly, I didn't hear anyone other than me say it. I'm not saying, oh, I'm great, I said it. I wish I wouldn't have. I wish I didn't think about it. I wish it didn't happen. I wish the tragedy with his brother didn't happen. But that's just the hand that he was dealt, and Stefon Tuitt decided to step away. And now we're more, you know, not 1 year removed. So I was going to say one season gone, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are rolling on, as is this offseason. Yes, here we are, Steeler Stat Geek. Come on, Dave, talk about numbers. I did. I talked about 1, 6/1. That's what it is. So June 1st, that is an important date. You might hear some other things around the NFL. There's already been an announcement of some teams that are going to get some more cap space because of the June 1st designation with people, because you can designate releases and things of that nature to be post June 1st. I think each team gets two of them, if I recall correctly. Maybe that's something that I should cover in the series that I have going on now at behindthesteelcurtain.com. Yes, that website still exists. And that is, I've been going pretty much every day. I've been kind of waiting to see if there's news otherwise, but it's pretty much been every day. I'm through 6 parts now of explaining how the NFL works. And I'm just giving various things that I'm going into that some of them are things that people don't understand very well. Some of them are things that people might understand just fine. So some of them might get skipped over, and this isn't for everyone. Some people don't care about the inside of what's going on. And some people might feel that they already have a good enough grasp on it, which is fine. But for those that didn't, this all came about because someone put a comment in an article that said, boy, it would be really nice to get some of this stuff laid out for us to really understand it better. That was when Reynolds Wren went on the reserve injured list. I still have the reserve injured list on my list of things to cover. I just haven't got there yet because every time I went to do something, I'm like, oh, I got to cover this first in order to get there. So on Wednesday, it was part 6 that was talking about contract bonuses, how they affect the salary cap, the different kinds, whether they're likely to be or not likely to be earned, what that means, how it lays out, how it would affect the salary cap then. Because people are like, well, if they're not likely to earn it, what's the point? What if they do earn it? Well, that then counts against the next year's salary cap. More often than not, it just affects how much a team rolls from one season into the next. They might be sitting there with $7 million to roll through. Uh-oh, someone had a not likely to be earned bonus in their contract where they earned another $2 million. Boom, it's coming off that amount that would have rolled over. Those are the kind of things that happen. And if you're wondering, well, what determines whether or not it's likely to be earned? I laid that out in the article. I'll give you the sum up of it right now. It's what they did the year before. if it's incentive in there for rushing for 1,000 yards and the running back ran for 1,200 yards the year before, deemed likely to be earned. If you ran for 900 yards the year before, deemed not likely to be earned. That's just the way it rolls. So that's some stuff, you know, talked about workout bonuses, how that works, per game bonuses. Check that out if you hadn't already checked it out. But that was part five. Just so you know what the parts I've done so far is I started with accrued seasons versus credited seasons, just because it's what you have to do in order to explain some other stuff. The second part was the waiver wire. The third part was the practice squad. Fourth part was futures contracts. Fifth, you know, part five was minimum salaries. And how they're different if it's a certain place in someone's salary, not salary, in their contract, if they have a split salary, which means if you're on IR, you don't get paid as much. That happens with a lot of players, not a lot of the big name players. So if you just go into any part of those, well, you'd want to go to the most recent parts because all the past ones are linked at the bottom. So you can go in and check out any of those. Just wanted to lay that out there. If you're someone who likes Stat Geek and kind of explaining the numbers behind things, you might like these explanations of how these kind of things work. So I thought I'd tell you, you could go there. Also, when was that? I think it was Tuesday evening. I put out a tweet and said, come on, Nerds of Steel. I need questions. Well, guess what? I got questions. Some of these questions are going to be difficult to answer. Some of them, not as much. I'm going to tackle at least one today, maybe two. I'm ready for two. It depends on how long the first one takes. And then I have another one or two in my back pocket, and I'm still looking for more. It's at STLR Superfan Dad on Twitter or STLRSuperfanDad@gmail.com. Send me your questions. So let's go ahead and dive into this one. I did my best. I don't have some of the numerical values to go with each year, but I think some, when we get into this, you'll understand. Let me read the question. This comes from DC, which is at underscore existing. Yeah, got to make sure I didn't run that all together. At underscore existing. Sent this to me, and then I, from where we had shared it from behind the steel curtain, said, what's the most free agent signings we've done in an offseason? And which group experienced the most success with the team? All right, now, this is kind of difficult to track. I got to tell you my woes here. First, I go to some of my go-to sites. And as you all know, if you've listened to the show before, my go-to site for statistics is Pro Football Reference. I like what they have the best. But there's not a way to go in, and this isn't something that they track with free agency that I've been able to find myself. If you've done it through Pro Football Reference and can tell me how to do it, please let me know. That would be great. But just to track who the free agents were, wasn't able to do that. So I go to Over the Cap. That's a place where I get a lot of my cap information. Their numbers line up with my numbers most of the time, and they do stuff with free agency. That's also where I go for compensatory stuff. They have great stuff when it comes to compensatory formula. Rather than me have to sit there and calculate it myself, they have it where it's done for me. Haven't had to worry about that the last couple of years with the Steelers because they're not going to be getting any compensatory picks. So I go to their free agents, and all they have is this year and moving forward. Even though I subscribe to their premium stuff, I could not find where I could look at years past. The other thing is they have everyone of every level with all kinds of things in there. I looked at this year's and got a certain list. Then I went somewhere else. Then I went to SpotRac. That's the other place I check my salary cap numbers with. Sometimes they'll get a number there before Over the Cap. Theirs aren't always as accurate. I mean, my goodness, they had the last year he was there, they had Joe Hayden's messed up for a while. Last year, Miles Boykin, they had him most of the year having his dead money hit count for the Steelers when it stayed with the Ravens when the Steelers picked him up on the waiver wire. That was a messed up. They have a dead money hit from Joe Haig, who was not under contract for the Steelers in 2023. There's no way they could defer money to 2023. His contract didn't go that long. They also include some things that I don't like to include now. They have some things that they don't include that need to be included now. Just some various things. But they still have some good individual stuff. They allow you to go back and look at the free agents from years past. And they don't line up. Because some of them list players that were picked up off waivers, some of them don't. some of the sites, and I'm talking about these, the both of them, because I can't remember which one's which. One of them will have someone that they'll have some of the Steelers re-signings of their own players, but they won't have all of them. Like, for some reason, last year they didn't have Troops of Core for that he re-signed with the Steelers. Might have, you know, might have just been how the timing of it was. I couldn't understand why they had some and not all of them. So I was using SpotRack because you could go back there, and then I get so far and realize that I have to have a subscription to go back even farther. So then I stopped. So then I had to go to another source. I hate this source, you know, trying to piece stuff together. I'll admit, I had to use some Wikipedia in there because it was there, but I was able to use their references to also get some stuff. Whew. Now I've given you a huge backstory about what it was take to actually figure out the free agents that the Steelers signed. And from all these different sources, it was a different number for the same year. They would, one of them would count one player, but not another. I mean, and everything. So this is what I tried to do. I tried to limit it. I tried to limit it to players that made the Steelers roster or at least the practice squad, just because if not, it just got into too much. Like, the Steelers might pick up someone in January on a futures contract, which was something that I talked about with my series of articles. And you look at the futures contracts, and the problem was, do you include those players or not? Those were basically practice squad players, more camp bodies, things like that. So what happens when you pick up a guy that's a journeyman that you don't think is really going to even make the practice squad, but technically was on another team last year? How do you differentiate this? So what I tried to do was I tried to stick to players that actually made the Steelers. And I just found another one that I included in one year that I don't think counts. And I'll even mention that here as we go. So I tried to stick to free agents that were significant enough that they made the roster. So this could be off slightly, but I'm doing the best I can to answer this question. And when you hear the list of the names, you kind of already have an idea of how the Steelers did with these free agents. So what I did is I went back 10 years because I included 2023. So I went back to 2014. Sorry I didn't go back any further, but it took me a lot to piece this together just to go back that far. So we're going to start with 2014. And 2014, I have the number of free agents they have as one of their higher ones. You'll see that as we go with some of these other ones. One of the higher ones, which was seven free agents that the Steelers had. So let's look at who they had that they signed from outside that, you know, made the team. How significant or not, we'll see. So I had seven. They actually had, I found a list that had eight, but then there was one that I don't know why they counted it. So here you go. Mike Mitchell from the Panthers, 2014. Cam Thomas from the Chargers. Lance Moore from the Saints. Arthur Motes, they signed away from the Bills. LeGarrette Blount from the Patriots. Yes, he was on the Steelers team for a while, even though they cut him. Bryce McCain from the Texans. Darius Heyward-Bey from the Colts. Then there was one more on this list, and I took him off the list because it was Adam, is it Podlesch? I think it is. Was a punter for the Bears the years before. The Steelers signed him, and he didn't show up. He didn't show up. They ended up releasing him, things like that. So I don't even know why that one was included. So that's why I went with those other seven. So if you think about that, that's actually not a bad free agent class for the number of signings that the Steelers had for how they contributed. Mike Mitchell, I know he's Brian Anthony Davis' least favorite player on the Steelers ever. He contributed. Cam Thomas, not so much. Contributed, but usually not in a good way. Lance Moore didn't come through in the way that you thought he would with the Steelers, but it wasn't that he was invisible there. Arthur Motes, we all know that he turned into someone that when you think of Arthur Motes, you don't think Bills, you think Steelers. That's what you do. He's even got a Steelers podcast. LeGarrette Blount didn't even last the season. I don't want to get into that story. Bryce McKay, significant contributions. Darius Heyward-Bey stuck around for a while, mainly as a special teams guy, and was that bottom of the depth chart wide receiver as well. So you think about that, they did pretty well in that year, in 2014, when it came to free agents. But that wasn't the best, maybe. We'll see. But that one's actually a pretty good standard to start with. Now, I did peek back a few more years, and there really wasn't anything close to 2014. So that also made it seem why that was a good place to start. You move to 2015, I only have one significant free agent from 2015, and that was D'Angelo Williams. He came in, did a great job as the quote-unquote number two running back, who was often called on to also be the number one guy. And he is kind of the standard that Steelers fans hold when they talk about bringing in a veteran running back. He's the guy that they mention. So that was 2015. 2016, this one was interesting, because this one was the Ladarius Green. This one was Ryan Harris. This one was Steven Johnson, inside linebacker. And this one was Ricardo Matthews, another defensive lineman from the Chargers. That one had some potential, especially with Green. Man, 4 years, $20 million. Didn't work out. And the Steelers, man, they got on the right side of the compensatory formula there, because they ended up getting a third-round draft pick where they drafted James Conner because of Kelvin Beachum, with him leaving and going to Jacksonville. But the Steelers lost a lot of guys that year, didn't gain that many. That was not the strongest class. There was a lot of hope for that class coming in, but it didn't work out. Remember that. There was a lot of hope for that free agent class. Didn't really work out. Moving on to 2017, this is ones that you're going to get into some more names that you're like, oh yeah, those guys, but you know, not nearly as much. And I had to cross reference some of these. Some of these were trades, so I had to cross them out. But there was five from 2017, and that was wide receiver Justin Hunter. That he came from the Bills. Running back Nile Davis from the Chiefs. Cornerback Cody Sensabaugh from the Giants. Nose tackle Tyson Alualu from the Jacksonvilles. And strong safety Damian Stafford from the Titans. If you look at those, Justin Hunter, Cody Sensabaugh might have been the next best one, because he was there for, I'm pretty sure he stuck more than, maybe he was just the one season. But Tyson Alualu was the main one there. Really made an impact with the Steelers there whenever after they had lost good old, you know, eventually when they lose Javon Hargrave. That wasn't a bad class there, but it wasn't setting the world on fire of just five there. Moving on to the next one, when you get into 2018, there you've got John Bostic, Morgan Burnett, and Nate Berhe, if you remember him. Well, what was he? Was he the missile or something like that was supposed to be so great with special teams, got hurt, things like that? None of those guys really panned out. The next year, 2019, Steven Nelson, Dante Moncrief, and Mark Barron. All right, well, Mark Barron, he was brought in to make sure the Steelers had someone inside linebacker. They drafted Devin Bush, and it was more Bush than Barron. That was their Dante Moncrief. That's kind of our recent standard of not a good free agent signing, where the way it worked out. Hurt his finger, couldn't catch. Steelers had to cut him because it was still a weird rule with the CBA about the compensatory formula, and just think, if they wouldn't have cut him, there would have been no Alex Highsmith. But Steven Nelson, he played well for the Steelers when they had him, but then he just got to be too expensive for what they wanted. So that was just three there. 2020, that was also three. There was a lot of bottom end ones in 2020, because I'll be honest with you, they had five listed on SpotRack, but really only three worked out. And that was Derek Watt, Eric Ebron, and the other one that didn't, you got to say it did because he at least played one game, was Stefan Wisniewski. Then he got hurt. Then when he came back, the Steelers released him. and he ended up back with Kansas City. So that was 2020, only three there. 2021, I had eight, and then I realized I think I got to knock that down to seven. So that was a bigger one in 2021. You know, coming off of the 2020 season, no one in the stadiums. 2021, you saw the dip in the salary cap, but yet the Steelers tried to go out and really get some low signings, trying to do everything they could, and they had seven or eight is the way I'm going to say it because I'm pretty sure the one doesn't count. Because it was B.J. Finney, Joe Haig, Miles Killebrew, Rashad Coward, Kalen Ballage. They had Abdullah Anderson, but he didn't actually stick around to actually play against the Steelers. So I took him off the list. Arthur Millette and Trey Turner that had to come in at the end there because of the whole issue with David DeCastro, which really affected the Steelers season more than what some people realize. That was a pretty big clash, but there really wasn't any splash there. I mean, Arthur Millette, played two seasons and did all right with the Steelers, but he was just released. Trey Turner, 1 year, didn't work out really. Miles Killebrew, special teams captain, but that's really about all you got. Then you go to 2022. This is where it really starts to go to show that there's a little bit something extra here. So I know we're past time for our break, but we'll get there. Because in 2022, there were eight. You had James Daniels, Miles Jack, Mason Cole, Mitch Trubisky, Levi Wallace, Gunnar Olszewski, DeMonte KZ, and Scott. What was his last name? Her first name. Why can't I remember? He was a lineman for him. Who was that? That didn't really have to play for the Steelers. His first name, I just wrote down the last name because, oh yeah, I would remember that. I'll think of that one really soon. I know I will. Was it Trenton Scott? Trent Scott. Yes, that was it. Trent Scott. So I knew it would come to me. So that's actually the biggest class that the Steelers have had in the last 8 years, and that was last season. But look at what the Steelers had out of that next year. They had a starters in Daniels and Cole and Miles Jack. Mitch Trubisky to start several games before their first-round draft pick took over. Levi Wallace was the starter at cornerback eventually. DeMonte KZ, once he came back from injury, was really working into that role, and he got another deal. You got to think about that. To me, 2022 is probably one of their better free agent classes, but you got also got to remember that was only after one season. But the fact that you got so many of these players still around for the next season, I think does speak to things. But I mean, but that didn't include everyone. My goodness, they had a bunch more on spot track. My goodness, 2021, they had even more because Steelers had a lot of low-end guys they were trying to get in 2021 just to see if they could find stuff. But I'm even thinking of someone like a Jannard Avery that we thought was going to be something when he came in and didn't even end up counting on this list because he didn't make the team. He got released not even in the last round of cuts. It was when they had multiple rounds last year, and he didn't even make it to the third preseason game. I think he asked to be out. So that's interesting. But now you've got the Steelers sitting there. They have 12 free agents that I counted now that have a legitimate shot to make this team. 12 free agents with a legitimate shot to make this team. One of the, one or two, maybe not, but I really think that they do. Now, this is going to take me a little bit to sort through because some of these are ones that the Steelers re-signed. But if you look at them, Allen Robinson, Isaac Seumalo, Marcus Golden, they just added, Patrick Peterson, Alandon Roberts. So far, I'm not saying anyone that I don't think is going to make the roster. Okay. Chandon Sullivan, most likely making the roster now. Nate Herbig, yeah, might not be a starter, but should make the roster. Keanu Neal, LaRaven Clark, that's someone who, may or may not depend on how things work out. Tanner Muse, same kind of deal. There you go. Look at that. Oh, I didn't even finish. Brayden Fehoko, okay. Did I say Armon Watts? Did I say Watts? I don't know if I said him in there. Did I skip him somewhere? Because I'm still not done my list. There he is, Armon Watts. And I didn't have Cole Holcomb. My goodness, look at all the players that the Steelers signed that could potentially make an impact. So you're talking about 12 players. The question is, what if only eight of them actually pan out? You're going to look back at those eight and be like, wow, kind of like, you know, is there a Jannard Avery in this group? Something like that. So I didn't have like actual numbers to go which one was the best. You could just kind of look at these names and say, all right, who's actually stuck around and done something with the Steelers? So there might be years like 2015, they only had one significant signing, but it was D'Angelo Williams. That was a good signing that they had. All right, Steven Nelson was decent for a couple years, but that's really all it was. You know, was Derek Walk a good signing or was he not? And then last year, look at all these guys like a Mason Cole, one of James Daniels, and Levi Wallace. What are those guys going to have in year two? So I would say definitely 2022 for ones that have already played at least one season, I think is the best of the last 10 years. One more year of a sample size will really help, and then also to see what's going on with 2023. Wow, we're really running over. Got a short question and answer for the second half, so stick around. This one's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about some big-time throws, so stick around. We'll be right back. When my phone. All right, Steeler fans, we're probably about 80% done this show when we finally just had our commercial break. But that's what happens when you have one big question and then just one other one that's a good question. But it's not going to take a super long time to answer this. And this one comes from 20th Century Icon. This is another Twitter one, at Dave90125. There we go, Dave90125 on Twitter, 20th Century Icon. It says, can you break down what goes into Pro Football Focuses, that's PFF, PFF's big-time throw metric. Supposedly, they had KP8 ranked near the top in the league in the second half of the season. Well, we'll look at where he was ranked and everything, but he wants to know what goes into PFF's big-time throw metric. All right, I got the answer for that. I do. This is what PFF says their big-time throw metric is defined as. They are. This is a quote. These are all passes with, and I quote, excellent ball location and timing, generally thrown further down the field and or into a tighter window. So a big time throw, I'll read that again. It's passes with excellent ball location and timing, generally thrown further down the field and or into a tighter window. So what makes a big-time throw? Here's your answer. You ready for it? You ready? Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it. It's whatever the PFF person who's scoring that game thinks. There's really no defined metric. It's not even like deep passes where they have to go beyond 15. You know, it's in the air, has to travel 15 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, something like that. There is no number measurement that PFF has at least stated that they says goes into a big-time throw. You could have a big-time throw that's right at the line of scrimmage, but it's into a very tight window. You could have a big-time throw that's really far down the field and just happens to hit the right spot. Excellent ball location and timing. There is nothing objective about that. It is all subjective. It is all opinion of the person looking at the throw. And they have multiple people that are scoring their stuff. So this is one of those metrics that sounds nice, but there's really nothing to it. It's really It could be that PFF has their favorite players. We all know that PFF is absolutely, when I say we all know, I hate when people say we all know, because usually when they say we all know, it's not true. But the vast majority of people, especially Steelers fans, know that PFF is absolutely in love with one Myles Garrett. He could get there. He could have one pressure in a game against the Steelers where it's a quarterback hurry. Doesn't even get a quarterback hit or a sack, and he'll be the highest scored defender in all the NFL for the week. It really sometimes doesn't make sense. Oh, well, he was winning his matchup and they were just throwing it to – no, we even killed that narrative that it wasn't any faster than what, at the time, Baker Mayfield was throwing for the Browns when you were looking at those crazy numbers that they came up with the one time. He had, like, no stats, and he was their defensive player of the week. It's crazy. He had one tackle in a hurry, something like that, and was their defensive player of the week because they said he constantly won his matchup, but he didn't do anything with it. Oh, they rolled away from him. You know what? That's what good teams do. You know what? Are we going to do the same thing? Do they do the same thing with T.J. Watt? No. They said, oh, he didn't get home in the sack. For some reason, they just have players they're in love with. So if there's – I don't know. I haven't looked at maybe a quarterback that PFF is in love with. I'm not sure, because that one of that – of edge rusher really stands out because of all the times they have matchups with the Steelers. So I'll say it one more time. It's passes with excellent ball location and timing, generally thrown further down the field and or into a tight window. Bottom line is, the person who scored in that game, they're like, oh, that was an impressive throw. Check. Then if enough people that are scoring that game check the same throw, they'll count it as a big-time throw. That's what it is. So it's an interesting thing to talk about the number, but you really want to know, is it really that great of a metric? I don't know. But let me tell you who had the most big-time throws in the NFL last year. This is what PFF had. They had Josh Allen head and shoulders above everyone else. They had him with 44 big-time throws. Then they had Geno Smith and Tom Brady tied at second with 34, 10 behind. Then two more people, one behind them at 33, with Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. Joe Burrow was 6 with 31, and we'll finish up with everyone that was 30 or above with Kirk Cousins, who was 7. I will tell you, Kenny Pickett was tied. He was tied for 15th for the season with Jacoby Brissett, two players that didn't start all season, with 18 big-time throws. Sorry, he wasn't the only one he was tied with. Well, there was more of them. Also tied with Dak Prescott, Tua, and Jared Goff. That's where he was for the season. Now, the question said that he ended up towards the top of a list in the second half of the season. I don't know if that's exactly true, because I looked at weeks 10 through 18. Now, remember, Kenny Pickett didn't play pretty much two of those games. Barely played in the Ravens game, didn't play in the game against the Panthers. But when you look at numbers, Josh Allen was first with 23 when you look at that. Now, and you also got to remember, he only had 8 games. Joe Burrow only had 7 games because they had both their bye and the game that didn't happen with Buffalo. And yet he was tied for second with 18. Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Kirk Cousins. Kenny Pickett was actually tied for 8th. So if they did a top 10 list over the second half of the season, he was tied for 8th with Mac Jones and Justin Herbert, each with 15. So 15 out of Kenny Pickett's 18 big-time throws came in week 10 or later. In other words, after the Steelers' bye. So he did have a pretty good big-time throw percentage, which is something that they have in there. He was 6th in that, which is your big-time throws compared to your number of attempts. He was 6th all by himself with 6.3%. Number one was Matt Stafford. Probably was thrown out because he didn't have enough attempts. He only had 18 attempts, so he was probably thrown out. Number two was Jordan Love. He was probably thrown out because he didn't have enough attempts, because he had 8.3, which was one big time throw out of 12 attempts. That was it. So they probably threw him out. Josh Allen had 8 percentage of big time throws because he had 23 out of 269. Mitch Trubisky was actually higher than Kenny Pickett because he had four of them out of 52 attempts, which was 7.4%. You had Zach Wilson that had five out of 75. Sorry, I looked at dropbacks. Same with Trubisky. I said 54. That was 54 dropbacks. It was 52 attempts. Zach Wilson, 75 throws, 6.6%. Then you got Kenny Pickett, 224 attempts, and he had 15. He was at 6.3. So if you look at those who were over 100 attempts in the second half of the season, Pickett would have been second when it came to percentage of the number of percentage of big time throws to the number of attempts. So that's probably the number you saw. So I'll give you those numbers and everything that's out there. But I just do have to say that, man, oh man, that is a metric that sounds pretty neat. But when you dive into it, there could be someone who has a longer, tighter, better timed throw in one game that doesn't get counted as a big time throw than one that does in a different game, all based on the opinion of those who are watching it. But that's PFF in a nutshell. That's what their scores are. It's all based on the opinion of the person actually scoring it. So, and they have multiple people score it, and they look at each player for every play. That is what they do. So there, that's the big time throw metric. So I hope that answered a little something there. So it's pretty neat to see that with Kenny Pickett, that they at least thought he was making some big time throws, tight windows or deep balls, probably more. I don't know which one it was for him. But almost all of them were after the bye that he had for the season. He only had three before the bye. And then 15 afterwards, according to PFF. So there you go. So once again, thanks for joining me here today. June 1st. Hopefully there's not any kind of news like last year. Make sure you're checking out all our other podcasts. You've got the curtain call was last night. You've got the Steelers preview coming up tonight. You've got the lineup. Make sure you're checking it all out. And also, stroll on over to behindthesteelcurtain.com. Yes, that website still exists. And as I always say to close these out, thanks for getting out.